I interview creators about how they run their businesses, like where's the money actually coming from, which social audiences are actually driving revenue, what tools and platforms and partners are they using, how do they work with brands, how do they work with content partners. And then LinkedIn is both sides of the coin, right? LinkedIn is about educating creators, but it's also about educating the creator economy, educating brands, educating creator economy companies, executives, even early career folks who are learning the ropes of how to work with creators and what the business models are. So that in the long run, I think that if everyone has a better understanding of how the other side works, if creators understand why brands have the terms that they have in their contracts and why they communicate in the way that they do, and if brands and creator economy companies understand like why creators may not be interested in what they're offering and how they can tweak those offerings to make them more interesting for creators and that kind of thing, I think it's ultimately healthier for the entire ecosystem.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
Welcome to Earned. So I've got Avi on the show today. Quickly on Avi. Avi's the founder and writer of Creator Logic, the newsletter, previously head of creators at Patreon, previously helping manage talent at William Morris Endeavor, so more like a talent agent, as well as a bunch of stuff in between that's fascinating. And part of the reason I wanted to have Avi on is, one, love the stuff that he does. Two, is growing really fast, right? So he started publishing primarily on LinkedIn, but across channels, like you heard us kind of chatting about. More than doubled that following year date, up to about 15,000 so far following him on LinkedIn. And then started a newsletter as well, which I haven't started, but I'm fascinated at the concept of doing. Closing in on 10,000 subscribers already within, what was it, 8-9 months, something like that. Thanks so much for taking the time, Avi. I'm excited for our chat today.
Yeah, Connor, thanks for having me.
I'd love to start with, what made you get into this in the first place? As well as if you could give just a really quick story on your background, who you are, because I do think that provides a lot of context to all the discussions that we'll have.
Sure. I'll give a quick background. You know, I've spent 15 years or so in the creator economy before it was called the creator economy. And I've sat at every seat around the proverbial table over that time. So as you mentioned, was one of the first talent agents in the space back even before the Vine days when YouTube AdSense was invite only, signing YouTubers, trying to figure out how to make them money back when they didn't make money. And so established a lot of the models that we now take for granted, right? Like YouTuber book deals and putting them on tour and putting together movies with them and that kind of thing. And since then, I've been an influencer marketer. I've been a producer. I've built a production company. I've founded companies. Most of those didn't go that well. The current one is doing okay. And most recently led the creator partnerships team at Patreon. And like the kind of through line there generally is that I'm working with creators and trying to help them make money. Now, as an influencer marketer, obviously my first priority is trying to drive results for whatever company I'm working with, likewise on the creator partnership side. But a lot of these companies like Patreon or Wheelhouse, where I built their production business, like their mission was to help creators make more money and grow their businesses and be the infrastructure for that. And the other through line or direction that my career has taken is that I started out working with the biggest creators in the world, right? So like, you know, I used to represent the number two YouTuber in the world, this guy Herman out of Latin America, right? And like some of the biggest Viners back in the day and some of the biggest YouTubers and blah, blah, blah. And like over time, it's kind of flipped. Of course, most recently, Patreon, their mission is to really allow creators who can't make money elsewhere to make money on the platform. I'm sure Jack would argue with that being the mission, but like that is ultimately what Patreon is. A lot of people have found a way to make a living on Patreon where they couldn't elsewhere. And so now leaving Patreon and thinking, what do I want to do? I think one of the most interesting things that I feel like I've learned through experience and through observation and through talking to creators is that the creator economy is so vast and diverse. We tend to talk about categories. We tend to put people and groups and whatever into buckets, right? Like gaming creators and beauty creators and comedy creators, right? But like the reality is you could talk to 5 gaming creators, all of whom play the same game, let's say Minecraft, and they'll all make money in completely different ways. One of them might be almost entirely AdSense on YouTube. Another one might actually not really have a presence on YouTube, maybe on Twitch. Another one may be on neither, have a TikTok channel and may make money by selling merchandise. Like there's so many different ways that creators can make money. And we read a lot of headlines about only 4% of creators are making over 100K and blah, blah, blah. I want to change that. I want to help more creators make money, because I have been on the vanguard of a lot of these business models. And now we're seeing the diversity of ways creators are finding to make money. And I think helping creators understand all of the options in front of them and how other creators are doing it and how they could do it, to me, that's like a worthwhile mission and a worthwhile way to spend my time. So that's kind of the inspiration for Creator Logic. I interview creators about how they run their businesses, like where's the money actually coming from? Which social audiences are actually driving revenue? What tools and platforms and partners are they using? How do they work with brands? How do they work with content partners? And then LinkedIn is both sides of the coin, right? LinkedIn is about educating creators, but it's also about educating the creator economy, educating brands, educating creator economy companies, executives, even early career folks who are learning the ropes of how to work with creators and what the business models are. So that in the long run, I think that if everyone has a better understanding of how the other side works, if creators understand why brands have the terms that they have in their contracts and why they communicate in the way that they do, and if brands and creator economy companies understand like why creators may not be interested in what they're offering and how they can tweak those offerings to make them more interesting for creators and that kind of thing, I think it's ultimately healthier for the entire ecosystem. So that's where I come from and why I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't know, I keep seeing mixed stats on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I even pay for Blue, but only because like there's a distribution advantage and I don't actually engage on Twitter. I have a VA that I pay to just repost. She like basically takes my LinkedIn posts, turns them into threads and posts them. So is there value in that? I don't know. I think it's a slow uptake right now, but from what I've seen of other creators, like syndicating written content to other platforms does work. And it's kind of like shots on goal, right? So, you know, if I'm posting 2-3 times a week on Instagram, on Twitter, then hopefully over the next year, within a year, that's what, 52 weeks, 3 pieces of content. It's 150 shots on goal to like try to get something picked up. And that's like how you grow, right? It's just about consistency and more shots.
Totally. Yeah, I feel like with Twitter, it's something where I really focused on Twitter for like a few months when I first started doing the LinkedIn stuff in February. And it was unique. It was different. One, I think engaging with other people is quite critical because then they engage with you, right? They want to engage with you. I think of the moment content, like content that's hot right now, like Twitter's about like what's happening right now. So seeing something, hopping on that, providing unique data, perspective, et cetera, worked really well for me. And honestly, when I really focused on it, I was actually outperforming, even though I had almost no followers on Twitter, I was actually outperforming LinkedIn in terms of reach, right? Just like number of people seeing the content.
Totally.
And so I think you can be really good there. I think the question is whether or not the people that are interested in what I have to say are on Twitter. Is that audience even there? Not whether or not Twitter is valuable, but just whether or not it's valuable in this particular category.
That's always the question, right? Like, I'm never going to be like a Twitter power user. I just have never really liked the platform and now like it even less. But I'll leave it at that. But I think where I might invest next is video. I'm not an editor. I don't have a ton of time to like learn how to make good TikToks and that kind of thing. So I will probably need to find a company to help make that happen. Like in an ideal world, I can pay a company so I can show up once every other week, shoot a bunch of content. They do the editing and the posting and whatever. And like, I've already got hundreds of essays, many of which are somewhat timeless, evergreen, if you will, that could turn into those kinds of posts. So I think that's probably the next thing. Like I need a megaphone. I only have limited bandwidth for engagement. So I'm only going to spend it on the places where I actually enjoy doing it. So that's LinkedIn. And I'm actually starting to invest a little bit into Reddit because I like Reddit. Oh. Even though Reddit and Twitter sometimes have the same problems, I find that Reddit is much more of a community in that like, yeah, there's trolls and people who frankly suck, but like a lot of people there are there because they're looking for help and they want to give help and they're looking for advice and they want to give advice. And like, it's a two-way conversation that is, there's good faith in a lot of it. And so what I'm starting to do is trying to show up in like all the creator subreddits and jump in where I think I can add value and give advice based on my long experience working with creators and helping them make money. And I've just started doing that this past week. So obviously like got to build karma and I've got to build credibility and blah, 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 blah. But like, I've been on Reddit for many years with like my secret account. And so I want to now be public there and like be creating value for creators. And the hope is in doing that, that then drives them to the newsletter, to LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's funny, again, because my audience is not creators, right? It's more the brands that are working with creators. And they may be on Reddit, but I wouldn't imagine there's going to be like subreddits dedicated to that.
I'd be surprised, yeah.
Yeah. So that makes a ton of sense. I think what's interesting for me, right, and part of the way that I found you was one of those creator breakdowns that you're talking about, where you really broke down the business of a creator in a way that nobody else is doing. And so to your point, I'm not a creator, or well, I guess I am a little bit, but like I'm not trying to monetize in that way. That was fascinating to me. I'd be curious, having already been in the space for a really long time, going into this, what did you learn after having done these interviews that you didn't understand when you first started? Like, so prior to doing Creator Logic, what do you think have been some of the things that you have confirmed? Like, yep, 100%, this is really important on the creator side of things, or this is something I didn't understand prior to having had all these really cool conversations?
I think one of the biggest things probably is that even within specific business models, there is huge variation in offering and complexity and pricing. So I'll give you an example, like Patreon membership. It's the original membership platform. And you know, if you look at Patreon's best practices, like three tiers, $5, $10, $20, or $25 offer exclusive content, offer community. And that's what almost all creators on Patreon are offering, right? It's like in that sort of price range. Look at like Kajabi or Circle or some of these other platforms, right? Patreon's creator, prototypical creator, is an artist. You look at their homepage, it says creativity powered by membership. Very yep. Artist. You look at Kajabi's membership page, it's like increase your revenue. That's speaking to a very different consumer. That's speaking to business creators. And if you look at like the membership offerings that a lot of people that use these platforms, Circle and Kajabi and whatever, are offering, I mean, those memberships are like $1,000 a year. It's like $100, $150 a month or more, right? Jay Klaus, $2,500 a year for his membership. I'm in a Asian American creator membership group, and that's $1,000 a year. That's a very different price point, a very different offering than what Patreon's creators are offering. And the interesting thing for me is that like there was no discussion about those types of creators and those types of offerings at Patreon. That's not who they were thinking about or targeting. And I'm willing to bet that Kajabi is not really thinking about or targeting musicians and podcasters, maybe podcasters because there's a lot of variation there, but like artists, they're targeting business owners. And what I've learned kind of through a lot of these conversations, just like the sheer variety of thought processes, of sophistication, of mindset, that then leads to an infinite variation of business model and offering.
Well, I think what's really interesting about that, right, is not every creator is trying to directly monetize their audience the same way. It's like, I host a podcast. We don't sell any ads. We don't make any money via the podcast. But obviously, it ends up being functionally an advertisement for the company. Or in your case, you're doing creating, right? You're creating great content. You're not really selling media. You might here and there, but that's ultimately, it's a way to drive consultancy, way to drive new products you might want to launch, drive community, all these kinds of things. And that's the case for a lot of people, right? A lot of people, they're doing it for a variety of reasons. And it's because the cost of entry is so low, right? It's just like, do you have access to the internet and a phone? Okay, great. You can be a creator, right? Like that's all it takes. It is a worthwhile investment for a very wide variety of people.
It's interesting that you say that. I think, first off, there's some controversy in the entire space around like who is a creator? What constitutes a creator? And depending on who you ask, you'll get a different definition. One of the definitions is like someone who makes content and makes money off of that content. Now, I would argue there's plenty of creators who are not monetizing, but the other thing is I have a thesis that the creator economy is colliding with the economy and eventually will become the economy. And that is largely powered by the intersection of creation and small business. And so there's a lot of creators that are making content, have huge audiences, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of followers. But to your point, they're not selling ads, doing sponsorships, selling merch or whatever. They're driving those people to a business. And that business may have nothing to do with content creation, right? Like one of the guys I interviewed for Creator Logic, Duke Alexander Moore, has a tax firm.
Yep.
He creates under the name Duke Loves Taxes, and he signs mostly creators and small business owners to his firm as clients. And like that is his business. or a guy I follow on Instagram is a fishmonger, funky fishmonger on Instagram. He owns a fish market in New Jersey. Now, I don't live in New Jersey, so I can't buy from him, but I've made many of his recipes. I made one of his recipes last night. And, you know, if I ever end up in New Jersey, you bet I'm going to go buy some fish from him. So there's many, many examples of this, right? I follow bartenders in London. And when I was in London a couple of weeks ago, I went to their bars and tried their specialty cocktails. And like, that to me is as much part of the creator economy as like someone who is making content and selling sponsorships or running AdSense or selling merch or one of these many models. So I think that's the future of the creator economy. And I think largely a lot of the problems that like your full-time creators, the creators who are just making content and aren't necessarily driving to some other business, but are sort of making the content the business, a lot of those problems have been solved. Not all of them, but there's enough monetization platforms, there's enough awareness platforms, there's enough link and bio platforms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I think the new problems are like, how do we let people build bigger businesses or build different businesses and leverage content and leverage being creators? And like, how do we connect those dots? And to me, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think there are so many different opportunities to enable that process. I mean, it's funny, like I was looking at Riverside prior to this. It's like, you know, their headcount's up almost 100% year over year for the last couple of years in a row. And it's like, who's using it? People like me. Like, I'm not a traditional creator in the sense that you defined earlier. Yeah, I just saw an article. I can't remember what it was. It was this real estate agent who started just doing tours of like these multi-million dollar homes in New York or wherever he's based. I think it was New York. And he's built a massive audience doing that. But ultimately, he makes all of his money off of real estate, right? Like that's how he actually generates income. So let's stick on that thread. Let's stick on this creator economy thread for a second, because I think that this time in the creator economy is very interesting, pretty wild, frankly. And you've been there at kind of the center of it, right? We had 2021, where there was just obscene amounts of venture capital flowing into the ecosystem. And some of those companies have done really well. So like Kajabi, you mentioned, I think Spotter's been growing really quickly. Substack continues to grow really fast, but others have struggled. So Cameo, Jellysmack, Patreon, to a lesser degree, Cameo and Jellysmack in particular, like fairly large layoffs. I'd be curious, what do you see as the pattern across those companies that have been successful in this ecosystem, as well as those that haven't? Like, where have they gone wrong?
I don't know if I'm going to say anything original here. Like at the end of the day, the companies that have had to go through that kind of pain are the ones that raised at very high valuations, probably valuations that weren't necessarily justified by their revenue in a market that had free money. In terms of product and offering, to be honest, some of these I find kind of surprising. Like Jellysmack, I think, is a strong offering for creators. Like distribution revenue is something that not a lot of creators can do on their own or have bandwidth to do on their own. So there's a real value to that service. And, you know, a lot of those creators are making real money off of it. And so Jellysmack is making real money off of it. So is the business bad? I don't necessarily think so. I just think that you get out over your skis and sometimes you fall. I think some of the companies that are really in danger or are consolidating likely were solving problems that didn't exist. This is also maybe a controversial take, but what happened in 2020 is that Silicon Valley discovered the creator economy. Now, the creator economy has existed for a long time, since the aughts, right? If you read Taylor Lorenz's new book, she'll argue it was mommy bloggers and the aughts that really started it. And I don't disagree. And there's been several waves, even of investment, right? Like the MCNs in the early 10s, there are hundreds of millions of dollars invested there, billions of dollars in exits. And Silicon Valley had nothing to do with that. That was almost entirely an LA ecosystem play with some distribution a little in New York, a little in Canada. So in 2020 is when Silicon Valley discovered it. And of course, when I say Silicon Valley, I mean VCs, but also employees at the social networks, because before 2020, the social networks actively discouraged content creators. They didn't want platforms to be known as creator platforms because they thought their platforms were for everyone. And they are, right? Like everyone posts on Instagram. You have an Instagram, you put up a picture of your kid or whatever meal you just ate or the site from your vacation. It's like everyone is the Instagram user. But they weren't acknowledging that the creators are the power users. And yep. What happened in 2020 is, well, people were bored, had a lot of time. A lot of them started to post more and a lot of them started to consume more content for the people who were posting more. And so like the behavior changed dramatically. And so social media employees started to notice, oh, creators are a thing. Social media leadership started to notice creators are a thing. VCs started to notice creators are a thing. And what then happened? Well, a bunch of former tech employees became founders, and they had never been creators, or they had been casual creators, right? Again, like not necessarily making a living as a creator, but creating content, a few of them, and a few of them had never been creators, but like they knew creators, they watched creators, they liked creators. And so they made a bunch of assumptions. Maybe they talked to some creators they knew, and they made a bunch of assumptions, and then they put out products that they thought would solve those problems. And then they pitched to Silicon Valley VCs who didn't know a thing about creators, never spoken to a creator, never invested in a creator economy company, but knew that this person was from Instagram, this person from Facebook, this person was from Uber or Airbnb or whatever, right? Like big hot companies. That's their pattern recognition. And so they just gave them money. The reality is that a lot of those problems had already been solved. How many membership platforms launched? But Patreon already had 100 million in like actual revenue, a billion plus in payments to creators a year. So why are we trying to solve the membership problem when like there's already a massive membership platform? And more importantly, why are we trying to solve the same membership problem? I understand if you come in and say, we're membership for XYZ, but like that's not what VCs like. They like to hear we're going to take everything. And so a bunch of companies came in trying to attack markets that were already largely dominated, or at least problems that were already solved. And lots of founders came in who had never actually worked with creators. And so they didn't actually realize that creators operate differently than consumers, and they operate differently than businesses, because consumers come from a place of want. Consumers, when they're buying, they don't need. Their welfare doesn't depend on purchasing. So like when you're marketing a consumer, you're like appealing to their wants. When you're marketing to a business, you're kind of appealing to solving problems. You're partially trying to pitch to the person that you're talking to. You're partially trying to pitch to the needs of the business. But that person is going to get on the phone with you, or more likely to get on the phone with you, because like their time is paid for. There's no opportunity cost for them. Creators are kind of in the middle. They're consumers. For them, appearance matters. Their wants matter. It's like all the things that a consumer would have. But they're also running a business. But no one is paying them for their time. They have very high opportunity costs. Very low patience, very high risk, because like a lot of them have found this audience. They're afraid of losing it. They have no control, right? Because social media platforms and algorithms have all the control. So it's like you don't really know whether your next post is going to tank or work. And you don't know if your audience is going to be gone tomorrow, right? And these are things that, you know, if you've worked with creators for years, you know. Anyone from the LA ecosystem that's been around for the last 15 years knows all of these things. But if you come from some company in Silicon Valley, you watched YouTube for a while, maybe you've made a few videos and you're like, I love creators, I'm going to make content. You're suddenly baffled at, why can't I get anyone to take a call? Like I've heard companies say like, these creators are so annoying. Like they're taking our calls from the Starbucks parking lot. I'm like, yeah, if you didn't have to work in an office for a company, wouldn't you not be at a desktop all the time? What are you talking about? And so 2020 to now has been like a learning period, really. I'm not saying that any of these people are dumb. They're not. They just didn't know. And so like lots of learning's happening. And when there's a learning period, some companies lose money. Some VCs lose money. The VCs have cooled off, but the creator economy is still growing. More creators than ever. Actually, like despite the fact that a lot of bigger creators are seeing a decline in brands, the actual spend on influencer marketing is increasing. It's just shifted towards micro-influencers. Creator economy is still gangbusters. There's still huge opportunity. And now what's happening is a lot of people that have learned over the last couple of years are starting to start different companies, solve different problems. And so I think the next few years are going to be really interesting, and a lot of new products that solve new problems or solve unsolved problems or create new business models are going to pop up. And so that I think is really exciting.
Yeah. Again, I think it was Peter Thiel's book, Zero to One, which again, put kind of his politics to the side. I think that, you know, he talks a lot about people saw the 99-2000 bubble as a negative thing, right? You had this over exuberance from an investment perspective. But like the companies that got birthed out of that were like Amazon, Google, just these enormously impactful companies. Like 90% of the companies failed, yes, but the ones that emerged turned out to be like a really big deal. And so I'd be curious to see kind of who of the Substack, Spotters, Kajabi, whatever these Patreons that have done really well coming out of this, what they ultimately turn into.
The companies that also had layoffs like Jelly Smack, I wouldn't write them off either, right? Like,
yeah,
I think
that
Jelly Smack,
Amazon's had plenty of layoffs too.
Right. Like at the end of the day, everyone's had layoffs. Patreon had layoffs. I was laid off from Patreon. So there's systemic change that's had to happen. because of systemic change in the market. At the end of the day, like, I was hired to go get the biggest creators in the world and to deploy capital to do that. Once capital markets went down, it didn't make sense for me to be there anymore. I get that. The same thing has happened across a lot of these companies. And so you've seen like a shift towards product focus, a shift towards scalability, a shift away from more high touch, high cost operations. That's what happens at Jellysmack. That's what happens at Patreon. There are companies and there are markets that are fundamentally challenged, right? Like Cameo, I don't know. There is a market for Cameo, but like, is it ever going to be as big as it was in 2020? I can't see the future.
The stat I heard on Cameo, and again, I think this gets back to, are you delivering something of value, right? Like, we used Cameo and it was great, but like the average customer purchased 1.1 Cameos. Meaning like 90% of customers didn't come back and buy again. And we didn't come back and buy again. But it was like, cool, it was a gimmick, we did it, but like kind of got over it afterwards.
There's always going to be those types of products. Remember HQ Trivia, biggest company in the space for 2 or 3 years and then just disappeared, right? It's like, it was a fad. It was cool. They made a lot of money when they were cool. But like, I don't know that VC is the right model for the creator economy space in general. I fundamentally believe, right? VC is based on a winner take all model. It's like every market will end up having one or two companies, Uber and Lyft, Facebook and Google, Microsoft, right? Creator economy, to me, I think is going to end up being much more diversified. It's going to end up being much more fragmented. I think Patreon will be membership for artists and Kajabi will be membership for solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, and OnlyFans is membership for adult creators. And there's probably going to be others that are smaller and more, like there's going to be membership for athletes and membership for, I don't know, fitness people and membership for authors. Because I don't think the same network effects apply to creator businesses as do to consumer businesses. Because an author doesn't care what a soccer player does. And a career coach doesn't care what a musician does from a business perspective, from a revenue perspective, from a growth perspective. Their tactics and strategies are going to be fundamentally different. It's part of what I'm trying to show through Creator Logic and trying to educate the market on. When you look at like a Facebook or an Instagram, Snap or whatever, right? Like the needs that are being met and the network effects that are there, the referrals that are there, are because people all have the same basic need, right? They want to connect with other people. And the world is diverse. Their networks are diverse. And so like, it doesn't matter if I'm a LinkedIn writer, I'm going to invite my friend who is a programmer to jump on to Snap so we can chat. That's not going to be the same thing from different creators because a Twitch streamer has very different business needs than a LinkedIn writer. So that I think will lead to significant fragmentation. And I think the market is going to become almost like shoes. The products are going to be different. There's going to be some level of convergence. Everything's going to have a lot of the same features, but there's going to be like some differentiation based on who the core user is. There's going to be major brand differentiation. Just like Hoka's and Nike are running shoes, but like Hoka's are for people that value extreme comfort and Nike's are for people that value extreme performance. That's the branding, and that branding leads to product, which leads to branding, which leads to product, and it becomes this positive feedback loop. So that's where I see the creator economy going.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The one area where I do think VC applies from a creator perspective in particular is like arguably the biggest creator economy companies in the world are Meta, YouTube, TikTok. Like it's about helping creators get distribution. How do I build an audience?
That's well, yes and no, right? Because if you ask the founders of those companies what their purpose is, none of them would use the term creator.
Well, TikTok would. I think TikTok would. They kind of see creators as being the center. Like they don't view themselves as a social network, right? Like where it's about friends connecting with friends.
But they want to be, right? They've publicly said they're trying to move more towards that, right?
Okay.
And so like, I think to the point that I was making, like you attack a bigger market when you attack all people and you attack a less fragmented market when you attack all people. Because there's no such thing as getting all creators. You can't do it.
Yeah. Because well, I mean, even in the social networks, right?
Even in the social networks, you can't do it, right? There's lots of people that have Facebook accounts, but don't actually create on Facebook. Everybody has a Facebook account. Every internet connected person on the planet probably has a Facebook account. But like, how many of them are actually active? How many of them are actually creating content there?
Yeah.
And so like, even across social networks, it fragments for creators.
Yeah. It's been fascinating to see how creators have started to take center stage at these social networks generally. Again, to your point, prior to whatever, 2020, earlier, it wasn't really something they emphasized. And I think what's probably bearing out in the data, and I remember seeing an article about it too, but which is like, actually individuals are creating less, right? So it's like becoming like a smaller number of people commanding a larger percentage of the total conversation within these social networks generally. I don't have the data to support that, but I do think that it's an interesting narrative, which is watching these companies go, oh shit, this is actually a pretty big deal. I think YouTube realized it pretty early on, in which, you know, where they actually split revenues with the YouTubers. I want to talk about you as a creator. So we've talked about creators, creator economy, that kind of stuff. But obviously you got involved in this and you're growing really quickly. And I think that there's both things that I want to learn there. And I think things that other people would want to learn. You talked a little about why, but I'd love to know like the how. So like, okay, day one, you just say, I'm going to start being a creator. What has worked for you in growing to 10,000? Because you didn't have like a company behind you supporting you. You didn't have some big audience you were leveraging, but you got to 10,000 subscribers on a newsletter in 6 to 9 months and 15,000 followers on LinkedIn. Talk me through what those tactics are. What's worked in growing your own audience?
LinkedIn and, well, they're kind of the same for both. I lean into my strengths, right? I think everyone's got to lean into their strengths. I'm not like a growth hacker. I'm not like an SEO optimization expert or paid media expert. I'm a partnerships guy. So I lean into partnerships and that helps me drive growth. So like, I'll give you two examples. On LinkedIn, sometimes I will do posts about creators. But what I'll do is I'll reach out to those creators' management teams and I'll say, hey, give me some details on this partnership your creator did. If I post it, will you repost it? Because that way your audience will see it and also like your buyers will see it. So I'm like creating incentives for them. Like it's good for them. They get this thought leader talking about their client and why a partnership worked. That then hopefully leads to more business because their buyers see it. Works for me because like they're engaging with it. They're sharing it. Leads to more distribution, leads to new eyeballs, leads to new readers. That's an example of like a leaning into partnerships where like I have these relationships. People like what I'm writing. I can do it in a way that then leads to growth. Another one is on the newsletter side. A lot of my growth is that I have a team doing outreach to creators and pitching them on like, hey, Creator Logic is a community and a newsletter. And if you want to learn about how other creators are making money, you should subscribe. And like that is also a partnership with Influencers Club, where I've had this partnership with them. I create content for them. I have a referral deal with them. And they do the outbound for my newsletter. And that's helped it grow pretty quickly over the last few months. So I lean into my strengths. Partnerships are my strengths. I leverage my relationships. But I think depending on what people's skills are, they should do what they're good at. Like I'm not going to try to buy Facebook or LinkedIn ads because like I don't know the first thing about that, right? And the other thing I would say is you kind of have to be good. And yeah, I don't want to toot my own horn, but like I think that I write well and like the feedback that I get from people is that I write well and I know the space. I'm writing about something I know very well. Yeah. And not only do I know it, I have insider insights and tons of personal stories. And so my kind of superpower is that I have been writing for a long time. My first job in college, I worked for Parker Conrad, his first startup, and he actually taught me how to write. Like his first startup was called Wiki Invest. It was a wiki, right? Remember when like wikis were kind of like the buzzy startup category. And so he hired a bunch of like Ivy League kids to seed content about companies that were in public markets. And so he hired me to write. I wasn't very good at it at first. He showed me how to make an argument, how to use data to support an argument. And then I went on to write for him for like 4 years. And then I got the Hollywood bug and ended up in Hollywood rather than staying in Silicon Valley. But I learned to write that way back then. And I'm putting that to use now. And so if you look at the writing that I do, I make arguments, I back everything up with data, and I think people find that valuable. But that's what works for me. And ironically, a lot of the stuff that works for, you know, if you like buy Justin Welch's course or whatever, there's all these copywriting people and all selling like courses and templates and packets of structured templates for LinkedIn posts, blah, blah, blah. Like I try to do those. And they just don't work for me. People that read my content don't want me to do quippy things. They want like the deep structure analysis. So like everyone is different.
Yeah.
And through experimentation and by focusing on the quality of what I write, I think that has led to repeat readership.
Yeah. I think the idea of that feedback loop is so powerful, right? In creating in general, which is like you put something out there, you see the response, you go, ooh, People don't like that as much. Okay. And you lean into the things that work. And also this idea of, I'm a big believer in this idea of like recurring content franchises, where it's like you get something that hits, lean in and really become known for that thing, and then strategically add new recurring content franchises that work well for you.
I mean, that's exactly what I do. I have Mondays, I have Motivation Mondays, but like they're really about the market. So my Monday posts are all macro creator economy posts that showcase like the opportunity of the market. People love those. And so I just keep doing it. Like I did a few of those. I analyzed my posts. I realized posts with big numbers, big market posts, explanations of the opportunity, like those perform well. So now every Monday I do that, right?
Yeah.
I try to do like creator related posts on Wednesdays. I try to do negotiation tactic posts on Thursdays, like blah, 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 blah.
I love that. Well, appreciate you taking out all the time today. I'll do one kind of fun end of show question. So before we hit record, we were both lamenting our lack of sleep prior to this due to our children. How long into being a dad?
5 months.
5 months. So if you had any tips for new parents or soon to be new parents, what would be your tips? Oh, man. Having been 5 months in?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I would say the one big tip that both my wife and I agree on for soon to be parents is like, get a lactation consultant. Do it before you have the kid. Breastfeeding is hard. Everyone assumes it just magically happens. It does not. It's like one of the biggest causes of postpartum depression. It's one of the most challenging things. So like now, whenever we get invited to a baby shower or whatever, like we just give the same gift, like a pre-birth lactation consultant.
I love that. Getting the consulting in the middle is super stressful, right? Because you're like, I don't want this child to die. Like right. I need to give them food. And if it's not working, like that is...
There's very little that is more stressful than that. Yeah. So like, I think get a lactation consultant ahead of time. It is the best investment you can make, I think.
Well, Avi, congrats again on all the success. Super impressive to watch from the outside. And I think that people are learning a lot from what you're doing. And it's really cool to see you building this business from my perspective. So congrats again. I really appreciate you chatting today with us.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Awesome. Later, man.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.